1893. January of that year was too cold and dry for snow. It was a month of frozen hardness, of ice. Maniac drifted from hour to hour, day to day, alone with his memories, a stunned and solitary wanderer. He ate only to keep from starving, warmed his body only enough to keep it from freezing to death, ran only because there was no reason to stop. Even if the superintendent had allowed it, he could not have brought himself to stay at the bandshell. He returned only long enough to pick up a few things, a blanket, some non-perishable food, the glove, and as many books as he could squeeze into the old black satchel that had hauled Grayson's belongings around the minor leagues. Before he left for good, he got some paint and angrily brushed over the 101 on the door. During the days he ran, usually a slow jog, but sometimes he would suddenly sprint, furious, 10 or 20 second burst, as though trying to leave himself behind. Sometimes he walked. He crossed and recrossed the river. He wandered in all directions through all the surrounding communities and townships. Bridgeport, Conshohocken, East Norton, West Norton, Jeffersonville, Plymouth, Worcester. Whenever he crossed the bridge over the Schuylkill, he turned his eyes so as not to see the nearby P&W trestle. Even so, in his mind's eye, he saw the red and yellow trolley careening from the high track, plunging to the water, killing his parents over and over. After a while, he stopped crossing the bridge. Other than that, he went wherever there was room to go forward, along roads and alleys and railroad tracks, across fields and cemeteries and golf courses. From high above, a tracing of his routes would have looked as hopelessly tangled as cobble's knot. By nightfall, he was back in Two Mills. He would retrieve the satchel from wherever he had stashed it and find a place to endure the night. A few times, he revisited the buffalo pen, where he covered himself with a second blanket of straw. Other times, his overnight quarters might be an abandoned car, an empty garage, or a basement stairwell. When his original supply of food ran out, he fed himself at the zoo or at the soup kitchen down at the Salvation Army. He did odd jobs for housewives, ran errands for shopkeepers. He would not beg. One day, he found himself among monuments and canyon and rolling hills. He was in Valley Forge. Here, the Continental Army had suffered through a winter of their own, and the vast, stark, frozen desolation itself seemed a more proper monument than statues and stones. The only buildings here were tiny log and mortar cabins, replicas of the Army's shelters. Maniac could feel the ache swelling outward from his breast and feeling the enormous bounding spaces. He returned to town for the satchel and put himself up in one of the cabins. It was scarcely bigger than a large doghouse. The floor was dirt. There was a doorway, but no door. Several saltines fell from the blanket. He threw them outside. Let the birds have them. He wrapped himself in the blanket and lay down. He lay there all night and all the next day. Dreams pursued memories, courted and danced and coupled with them, and they became one. And the gaunt, beseeching phantoms that called to him had the rag-wrapped feet of Washington's regulars and the faces of his mother and father and Aunt Dot and Uncle Dan and the Beals and Earl Grayson. In that bedeviled army, there would be no more recruits. No one else would orphan him. The second evening came and went. Maniac never stirred. Knowing it would not be fast or easy, and wanting, deserving nothing less, grimly, patiently, he waited for death. Chapter 34. It was during the second night in the cabin that he heard the voices. They were not soldiers' voices. "I'm going in this one." "No, that one. That one's bigger." "I'm tired. I'm stopping."
"You stupid meatball. It's right there. Another 2 seconds."
"I'm staying."
"Great. You beef jerky stay. I'm going to that one. Good night."
Silence then.
"Hold on. I'm coming."
That was all. The ghostly soldiers returned, their haunted eyes seeking warmth, food, life. There was no morning, only daylight in the doorway. He pushed himself up, dragged himself outside into the blinding light. The saltines lay in the brown, frozen grass. The next cabin was nearby. January slipped an icy finger under his collar and down his back. He pulled the blanket tighter about himself, but it was too late. The finger had touched the last warm coal in his hearth, and his body, fanning the ember, shook itself violently. He walked to the next cabin, looked inside, and saw a body huddled in the corner. An eye opened, stared at him. Then, in succession, 3 more eyes opened. The body divided and became 2. 2 little boys.
"Get a load of this meatball,"
said the one with a front tooth missing.
"He walks around with the blanket on."
"Hey, meatball, why don't you bring your mattress along, too?"
"And your pillow, too,"
screeched the other. Then Missing Tooth whipped off his woolen cap and smacked Screecher in the face. Screecher retaliated, and Maniac had to step back while a 2-kid tornado swirled around the cabin. When they finished, they rolled onto their backs, shook their legs at the ceiling, and laughed as long as they had fought. The volume coming from Screecher was incredible, as though a microphone were embedded in his throat. Finally, Missing Tooth rediscovered the stranger standing in the doorway.
"Hey, Meatball, you running away too?"
"No, not really," Maniac replied.
"Well, we are," went Screecher.
"Where are you going?" Maniac asked. The answer came from both.
"Mexico."
Maniac bit back a grin. When they stood, he saw they couldn't have been more than 4 feet tall or 8 years old. "Well," he said, "it's good and warm down there, but it's pretty far, you know."
"Yeah, we know," growled Missing Tooth. "You think we're meatballs like you?"
He grabbed a supermarket bag in the corner, opened it.
"Look!"
It was filled with candy, cupcakes, pies, even a pack of butterscotch crimpets. Maniac's stomach rasped against itself. He remembered how thirsty he was.
"Where'd you get all this?"
"We stole it,"
Screecher blurted. The other smacked him with his cap.
"Shut up, Piper, you stupid sausage. You don't go telling people you stole stuff."
Piper returned the cap slap.
"You shut up, Russell. I didn't tell him where we stole it."
This time the fight was over in less than a minute, but it started up again when Maniac asked where they were from, and Piper said, 2 mils, and Russell said,
"Shut up! He might be a cop!"
and bopped him good. When they settled down, they stared at him warily. Piper snickered.
"He ain't no cop. He's a kid."
"Yeah," sneered Russell. "That's how much you know. They got cops that look like kids.
That's how they catch kids."
They stared at him some more. They moved in cautiously, one on either side. They opened his blanket. They patted him all over.
"What are we doing this for?" Piper wanted to know.
"We're feeling for a gun," Russell explained.
"Oh!"
After the patting, they backed off. "So?" said Russell.
"You ain't no cop."
"Not me," said Maniac. He moved in from the doorway. And with only a moment's pause, the story came to him.
"A pizza delivery boy. We have a contest, every week, and you two were chosen for a free pizza.
The two gapped at each other.
We were?
Yep, a large.
Where is it? Demanded Russell, glancing around.
At Cobble's Corner. You have 24 hours to claim your prize.
He waited while they bickered over what to do. Valley Forge was a good 5 or 6 miles from Two Mills. These kids might not have made it to Mexico, but they had come a long way and stayed out overnight, and someone, somewhere, must be worried sick about them. And he had a feeling they weren't kidding about stealing the food. He figured he'd better help them make up their minds.
You know, he said, you're taking the long way to Mexico. If you come back to Two Mills with me, I'll show you a shortcut. That did it. Soon the three of them were trekking past the Washington Memorial Chapel, Russell and Piper with their bag, Maniac with his satchel. It was early afternoon when they walked into Cobble's Corner at Hector and Birch. Maniac produced his certificate for conquering Cobble's Knot, and 20 minutes later, the young runaways were attacking a large pizza with pepperoni. Maniac confined himself to 3 glasses of water and 6 crimpets. The boys agreed with Maniac that they ought to stay the night in their own house before setting out for Mexico in the morning. They were barely a block from Cobble's when Maniac heard a familiar voice. Bellowing and barreling down the street was the fearsome, fastballer, King of the Cobras, Big John McNabb himself, and he was roaring mad. Maniac might have taken off, but he had found himself clung to and clutched by the two little urchins. They huddled behind him like babies on a possum's back as Giant John came red-faced and huffing up to them.
Where you been?
He yelled. As Maniac considered what to say, the urchins peeped from behind him.
We wasn't no place, John. We was right here with this here kid. And he ain't no cop, neither. We checked him out.
For the first time, Giant John looked straight at Maniac. A smile crossed his face.
Well, well, the frog man.
The smile vanished.
So what you doing with my little brother?